This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. In the last 5 years, Cincinnatians have become sensitized to the extreme rates of child and family poverty in our region. The issue of urban poverty has a long, complex history. In the late 1960s, workers for the Children's Home of Cincinnati decried the, quote, rootless families trapped in narrow lanes and fetid alleys. In 1912, Cincinnati was the focus of a famous study entitled Child Labor in the Streets. And in the mid-1930s, one of Cincinnati's first professionally trained social workers, Gene Leach, remembers tenements on Mount Adams, where every family in the building was on her caseload. Tomorrow night, the Northern Kentucky Forum will focus on the history of poverty in the region. Joining us today are the lead presenter at the forum, Northern Kentucky University historian, Professor Paul Tencotti, from Howard University in Washington, D.C., Professor Nikki Taylor, the author of Frontiers to Freedom on the Cincinnati African American Community. Her most recent book, Driven Toward Madness, focuses on Margaret Garner. And the president of the Cincinnatus Association and senior specialist in development communications at Children's Hospital, Melissa Currents. Cincinnatus is a co-sponsor of the forum tomorrow night. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everyone. Good to have you here this afternoon.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
So, Paul, how's the understanding of what it means to be poor changed over time?
That's a very good question. And I would say that overall, we're still operating in the same sort of philosophy. Our observations are generally, well, we want to divide the poor up into usually three categories. We want to say the working poor, that is those who have jobs. And then we're going to say the deserving poor, and these categories are not something I made up, obviously, but have been around for many years. And those would be people like, widows and orphans and those through no circumstances of their own have, entered into a stage of poverty. And then the so-called non-deserving poor, those folks who we think of suffer from some form of addiction or disease that prevents them. And in the 19th century, they would have seen them as being lazy. And we're still fighting those kinds of distinctions. And it's a very diverse population.
Yeah, there's lots of ways, as long as you're introducing categories, you can get to situational poverty. People have lost jobs and are, for the moment, out of work and don't have resources. Generational poverty, which is the problem of inherited poverty that goes on for many generations. There's lots of ways of approaching this. So, Nikki Taylor, your research has focused on the African-American community who've always been marginalized. What are the concepts of poverty, wealth, and success meant to the African-American community?
Well, I should just say that from the very first years of black migration into Ohio, specifically Cincinnati, formerly enslaved people were impoverished. The Cincinnati City Council in the 1820s started to lament the influx of the black population, and they immediately linked it to poverty and also to crime. Sad thing is, I think throughout Cincinnati's history, there have been systemic issues that really are centered on race and racism that have exacerbated the rate and the experience of black poverty in the city of Cincinnati.
What do you mean by that? You mean specific to Cincinnati has the...
Not specific to Cincinnati, but we're here talking about Cincinnati today, and so that's what I'm talking about. But basically, a racism that has prevented, from the earliest days, African-Americans from having certain types of professions in the 19th century that would be any skilled profession. And so they were relegated to the lowest rungs of the occupational ladder, as street cleaners, boot cleaners, and things like that. And so when you move forward towards today, you still see some similar types of exclusion in Cincinnati's economy. And so oftentimes people understand poverty and they would like to blame the people who are impoverished. I think somebody said deserving poor versus undeserving poor. African Americans have almost categorically always fallen into the category of undeserving poor.
Yeah, so even into the 20th.
Sympathy. Right, into the 20th century, exactly.
Into the 20th century, African American doctors in this city couldn't get hospital privileges. They might have been trained, they might have been fully licensed, but they couldn't get hospital privileges to practice their profession. So, Melissa, Cincinnatus was founded in the 1920s, right after World War I, part of that progressive reform movement of the early 20th century. Over those 90 years, Cincinnatus has been involved in a lot of things. The addressing issues of poverty have been one of those things the organization has come back to many times. What would you say, as you look back on the history of the Cincinnatus organization, where you've made a difference, where things that you've sponsored, you think actually have moved things ahead?
Yeah. So the Cincinnati Association, like you said, was founded in 1920. We are a group of civic leaders that really want to make our region much better. So, so we have a lot of history of what's really helped our region. I'd say more recently, we helped with the preschool promise. We're really a big proponent of that. We really helped push that through. We've been looking at issues of transportation for over 90 years. And so one of the things that we are working on right now is how can transportation help people who are in poverty? How can we have a greater transportation plan that really helps people in poverty? So that's just there's so many things that we've done. Civic leaders, you know, we love Cincinnati. And so when you care about Cincinnati, you really want to get involved. That's why Cincinnati Association's here.
So, Paul, over the years, that progressive model of civic leadership has frequently tried to stress good urban planning and certain systems reforms. Now, Melissa just mentioned transportation because that's on people's mind at the moment, but it's been housing, quality housing for lower-income people. It's been various systems over the years. What of that collectively has worked and not worked?
Well, that's an excellent question because if you look at something like the 1948 city plan, which really redesigned the way the city is, it basically took an area of the West End, which we know in the late 19th century had as many as 90,000 people living in. It was a very diverse area too. There were Jews, Catholics, Protestants, Slavs, just about, and blacks, and there were poor and rich and middle class. And it helped to really destroy that area by urban renewal efforts that were not very well planned. That is, in terms of not really finding people housing. I mean, the assumption that somehow they're going to be removed from an area and find housing elsewhere in the city and affordable housing was a bad assumption to make. The fact that we divided that part of the city off from the downtown area with this, you know, Mill Creek Expressway, this I-75, literally we took an area of 90,000 people and today, 11,000 people live in that area. We've destroyed neighborhoods and the destruction of a neighborhood like the West End, and I think Nikki is perhaps more of an expert on this and can explain this, means that you're really removing the power base from people. So with the black community, which had formed a massive community of professionals, you know, dentists and doctors and everyone else in the West End, you scatter that community out, and now all of a sudden they don't have the same kind of power that they once had. So for really poverty to occur, you need sometimes – if it's not situational, as you explain, where prejudice sometimes merges with privilege of another group and that privilege of another group that enables them to somehow hold on to power. Now, by the 1960s, we were talking federal programs like community action programs that tried to bring that power back to the people themselves. And I think that's really where where we somehow need to be. We cannot involve ourselves in possible solutions to poverty and unless we engage the very people who are poor themselves.
Nikki, you may want to comment directly on that and the dismantling of the West End as sort of a core African-American community. But also I'd like for you to address the question as a historian about, you know, sort of the magic term in the United States is the middle class. We created a large middle class. Where does that concept even come from, and how old is that concept, and how viable was it for African Americans and others, and who made it up, and what are we talking about here?
Okay, thank you for that. I want to correct myself. I meant to say earlier that blacks usually constitute what people perceive as the deserving poor. Somehow our actions have led to our poverty. But in terms of the West End, absolutely everything that was stated was absolutely correct about the displacement and urban renewal and all of those highway building that got rid of not just the West End, but the black community that was right on the waterfront where the Freedom Center rests. That was also destroyed. The community at 6th and Broadway was also, people were displaced, and so that black community was also moved. But in terms of the questions you asked about class, that's outside of my expertise, but I can tell you for African Americans, and in particular in African Americans in Cincinnati, the black middle class is there, but it's elusive. That status is elusive. As the example that you pointed out, Dan, African Americans have been physicians, but oftentimes have many obstacles that make class a slippery slope for us. And so that's been our experience, is that the actual bona fide middle class, even for other Americans, I think is very elusive. I think the term that we're using today is really maybe upper lower class, you know, working people, factory workers. Historically, I don't think those people would necessarily be considered middle class in terms of all the things that we attribute to middle class, but it's a term that's being loosely used in our, discourse today, our political discourse, to really encompass everybody. And I think that's a misuse of the term, and it kind of is not nuanced enough to really reflect the, all the different levels of at which people labor in America.
You know, you mentioned the area on the east side of the basin, which sort of 7th Street south, but east of
Broadway.
East of Broadway falling down, which eventually gets referred to as Bucktown, and too often that gets read back. But Lafcadio Hearn, who was one of the great writers in the late 19th century and became internationally famous, has this wonderful passage from 1877 in an article in the Cincinnati Commercial. I'll just read part of it. He's visiting people in that area, and if you read the whole passage, the whole article, you know, some are black, some are white. And it says, the same rickety room, the same crack stove, the same dingy walls bringing fantastic tapestry of faded rags and a grotesque shadow silhouettes of sharp profiles, the same pile of city coal in one corner, the same ghastly candle stuck in the same mineral water bottle, and it goes on, the sameness of life, the poverty of life. It's very, very, if people have not read Lafcadio Hearn, if you want to get in touch with what poverty meant at an earlier period, he's better at describing it than anybody I know. Paul, you're smiling.
I absolutely am. And then they didn't have much to look forward to when they went to work either. You know, we're finding out more and more about the working conditions of many women in Cincinnati in the 19th century. There are a bunch of buildings downtown in the area where you're talking, Sycamore Street between 7th and 8th, the Krippendorf Building across from St. X, the Pyr Building at the Renaissance at 8th and Sycamore. These were large manufacturing companies. I mean, we're talking 8, 10 stories of wooden floors, very little ventilation, extremely hot. And most of those factories were dedicated to making clothing and textiles. Can you imagine how flammable they were? And in fact, in 1911, when the Great Triangle Shirt Waste Factory fire occurred in New York City, a Cincinnati newspaperman reported that over 1,000 women were working in the Krippendorf building, which is 7-8 floors, with no external fire escape. So, you know, these conditions, Dan, as you described, not only were home conditions, they met them at work as well. No wonder disease was so rampant.
Yeah. Melissa, what about the question of what can a single place like Cincinnati do in the face of much larger economic and social changes? Because we know from studies like the Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality that, you know, Cincinnati falls into having some of the worst social structures that lead to poverty, high segregation, high levels of income inequality, low quality schools, strengths of social networks are weak. All of these things that the center points out. What can we do locally to fight big changes that are going on nationally?
I think one of the things that's hard when you hear about all these issues of poverty is you just feel overwhelmed and like, I'm a regular citizen, what can I do to really make change? And one of the things that Cincinnati's Association is about is like about educating ourselves and figuring out, you know, we might have a preconceived notion of how we can help with these issues, but once you really get down and dirty and really understand the issues, you'll see things a lot differently. So we invite people to come and learn more about, what's happening in our region about poverty so we know how to act.
Nikki, I would say that sort of some of those same points, the high level of continuing segregation in this community, and also tie that up with sort of some national shifts of destruction of labor unions, the suppression of labor unions over the last 30 years, tax policy that's changed over the last 30 years. Where are you as a scholar and as a person who's been involved in lots of things over your career? Where are you in terms of hope, sort of picking up on Melissa's point about what can be done about this?
Yeah, it's really interesting. In my decade in Cincinnati, I found the class issue to be almost unbearable, you know, just searing poverty that I had rarely seen in the U.S. And I knew, like, the history of it, that it wasn't just African-Americans. Before them, it was Appalachians, et cetera, et cetera. So Cincinnati, there's something unique about its history that perpetuates. The thing that gives me hope is that the population in Cincinnati is getting increasingly, to me, more aware and connected to outside networks. And so that helps. People are talking about it, something like what you're doing to raise awareness. There are agencies locally that are doing a lot of work. The Urban League is doing a lot of work. There are job training programs that are trying to combat some of the lack of skills and things like that some of the impoverished people suffer from. And then the thing that I liked as a parent of a student that graduated from Cincinnati schools is that, you know, increasingly we're moving beyond in Cincinnati the neighborhood model. And what I mean by that is that if you test well, you can go to one of the better schools in the city. And that helps to break the neck of poverty. Education is to me, one of the surest instruments for freedom and liberation from poverty.
Okay.
So that's huge, and I like that about Cincinnati Public Schools.
Paul, you'll be getting the discussion going tomorrow night at the forum, and we have information on our website about the forum. We have less than a minute left. What are you going to end your presentation with in terms of where are you in terms of hope, in terms of action?
I think in terms of hope and action, I would like to echo what Nikki and Melissa have said in terms of the local regional efforts, which I applaud all of those. but especially in terms of education and home ownership. Home ownership has fallen in cities like Cincinnati and Newport and Covington. And you were asking about the middle class and the definition of the middle class. That is the middle class dream. We have to do something to become a 21st century government and community.
Well, I want to thank Paul Tencotti, Nikki Taylor, and Melissa Currents for being with us today. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. Selena Reeder is our assistant producer. Layla Shikui is our intern. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.